Hello, listeners.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Show Talk with Angela Butler. We have with us this afternoon Dr. Damon Brantley. Dr. Damon Brantley is in Georgia. He's a certified doctor and general surgeon. He's going to be on the show tonight talking about HIV and AIDS cases. The call-in number is 1-347-327-9376. We're going to go into some music by Yaji and come back. Butler.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure to be here.
Listeners, we have a show tonight on HIV and AIDS. According to the Center for Disease Control, or the CDC, 1 in 16 black women and 1 in 16 black men and 1 in 16 black women will be diagnosed with HIV infection within their lifetime. So we have with us tonight Dr. Damon Brantley. Dr. Brantley, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing great, Angela. I'm really excited and proud about what you're doing, and I think it's very important. Information makes a difference, and we've got to get the word out.
Okay. All right. One of the things that concerns me is this, how it's affecting the community of African Americans. As African American myself, it's horrible. So I decided to do a show on this growing problem within the black community because it's killing people. I guess one of my first questions would be, what percentage do women make up of HIV cases here in the United States of America?
Well, I think the biggest thing that we're facing is really the proportion of new cases that are related to African Americans. And what I mean by that is that, you know, during the 80s and 90s, we first started to hear about HIV, and it became very popular, and we had a lot of diagnoses. And then for most other groups, you know, that the diagnosis rate has really decreased and gone down through intervention. But when we look at African Americans, we are continually making up a larger and larger percentage of new cases. So even though we only represent about 12% of the entire population, we're really looking at being about 45% of all the new cases, which is incredible, almost half of all the new cases. And you look at black men, they almost represent half of all the people who are living with HIV and AIDS in America today. So that's what's really striking, and that is that those numbers are really increasing in our community where they're staying steady or decreasing in other communities. And that's where, you know, people like yourself and this show hopefully will make a huge difference.
Okay. My question was, what percentage do African-American women make up in HIV cases? I guess you could answer that, please.
Well, you know, right now I couldn't tell you exactly the number of black women as relates to the total number of cases today. But what I can tell you is that black women represent about 30% of all of the new cases. And so, you know, if we look at our overall infectivity rate, it's highest among men, and that's about 2% of all black men are infected. And for women, for black women, it's a little bit lower than that, looking at about 1%. So I don't know exactly what that number is. And again, as you look at the trends, even from the CDC, we continually trend data over the years. And so even if you look at 2012's trending statistics, it's over a period really from 2006 to 2009.
Okay.
So I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know an exact number. And I don't know that the exact number is that important. But we know that black women, you know, are about a third of all the diagnoses of HIV.
Okay, a third of the diagnosis of all HIV. Okay. What percentage do African-Americans and Latinos make up of new HIV cases? You said in the beginning that we're facing a problem with new HIV cases, the new cases.
Right.
Do you know what percentage that is?
Well, yes, ma'am. So if you look at it in terms of population studies, African-Americans or black Americans make up about 12% of the population and about 44% of all the new cases. If you look at Latinos, they right now roughly are about 16% of the population and make up about 20% of the new cases. So, and that's really compared to, you know, the white non-Hispanic population, which is about 65% of the population, that only makes up about 30% of the new cases. So the Latino population, you know, its new case infection rate really kind of is about the same, a little bit higher than the overall population percentage. For white America, it's about half of their overall percentage. And for black America, it's over three times, almost four times our percentage in the general population.
Why do you think people are not getting tested?
When we look at this,
economic status, does that have anything to do with it?
Absolutely. So we look at access to care, and care starts with accessing testing. And there are a number of issues in the black community that kind of discourage people from testing. You know, one is we know that the ways that black people get infected are from needle sharing and drugs and homosexual activity. You know, both of those are behaviors that, you know, are frowned upon in the black community and are really stigmatized, and it's really hard to stay incorporated in the community when you're found to participate in those activities. Also, there's, you know, just the access to health care in terms of having private insurances. We know that people that have private insurances get tested more frequently and get treated earlier and live longer. And so, unfortunately, in the African-American population, we have fewer people that are employed and fewer people that have private insurances other than the Medicaid and Medicare. And so I think those are really the two biggest issues. And unfortunately, if we look at our institutions, the church, the black schools, there really hasn't been a push to move towards early testing and HIV/AIDS education, particularly as it relates to lifestyle changes. And that has really hurt us as a community. And we haven't really stimulated people to get out and get tested.
I know that within the black community, church has always been solid, and everything. But at my church, we change pastors sometimes because we're Methodist, so we don't always keep the same pastor. But there was one pastor who had HIV testing done, and it was frowned upon. What I'd like to know is, do you see, in where you live at, do you see a growing in the church, in the churches where you live at in Georgia? Do you see more people, more churches actively getting involved with HIV testing within the church, or is it not that good there either?
No, and I continue to be shocked. So if we look at the states that have the highest number of African Americans living with HIV, it is New York, number one, Florida, number two, and Georgia, number three. And particularly if you look at Georgia and Florida, kind of in the southern, the Bible Belt, thought to be conservative, and also places where historically, you think that you have progressive African-American churches. But it's still quite amazing how quiet the church has been when it comes to testing and education. I have lived where I am now for 2 years, and I visit churches regularly, and I have yet to hear one sermon that was related to HIV/AIDS, or attended one workshop, or heard of one testing program out of any of the churches that I've visited over the last 2 years. And so that's quite incredible in 2012, when we look at the just horrible numbers as it relates particularly to African Americans, how quiet the church has been, particularly since when we really look at it, the issues that really relate to preventing HIV and AIDS are basic issues of the church. And that comes down to really lifestyle. It comes down to high-risk behavior, which is having unprotected sex with multiple partners and engaging in intravenous drug use. These are things that aren't just secular or social issues. They also are the core underpinnings of the church, participating in fornication, understanding that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit and that what we do to our bodies is important, and understanding relationship. God is a God of relationship, and how we relate to each other is very important, particularly when it comes to being faithful and being true to our partners. So if we would just live different lives, we could virtually eliminate HIV and AIDS in our community.
So you're saying that faithfulness and perhaps monogamy, faithfulness to one partner, would help help take down the cases of HIV and AIDS infection in HIV infection AIDS in the, within the black community?
Absolutely, within all communities.
The harder it would,
it would virtually eliminate it. So if you and your partner were tested, and you and your partner decided to be monogamous, and you got married before you had sex, and you only had sex with that person, and you weren't shooting drugs through a needle, it would be virtually impossible for you to get HIV and AIDS. Virtually impossible. And that certainly would stop the spread of the disease.
Because African Americans have the highest incarceration rate, and in in all the states that I know of, there's no women besides correction officers and administration in the prison system. Is that causing a spread of HIV? Could that be causing it too?
Well, certainly participate.
I'm not trying to label one group of people as anything, but could that be causing it too? Because once men and women are released from prison, because it's a known fact that black people, black Americans are sent to prison at a higher rate than any other race in this country. And we only make up, like you said, what, 14% of the population?
Right, 12 to 14%. Certainly the industrial complex that participates in the profiting from the penal system plays a role. So we know that with privatization of jails, that we've seen really a proliferation of jails and the numbers of black men being incarcerated. And there's some people who are just making a lot of money on doing that. And so, you know, as a community, we can't wait for them to say that they want to make less money and do something differently. They're going to continue to do that as long as our black men put themselves in that position. Again, you know, I always teach that life is about choices. Once those men are in jail, they still have choices to make. But we do know that there is significant amount of sexual activity and contact within jail. We also know that there are drugs present in jail. And so those are the two activities that allow for the spread of HIV. If we look at black women who have been hit particularly hard, they are infected by needles as well, but they overwhelmingly are more affected by heterosexual contact, which means that the black woman has come into contact with a black man who has had homosexual contact and been infected. Usually that black woman does not know that that black male has been engaging in homosexual activity that may be in or out of the jail system. So certainly jail is playing a part, and incarceration is playing a part because of the homosexual sexual contact that happens there, and also the continued use of drugs. You know, so many men, if they aren't doing drugs when they enter, turn to drugs as a way of coping, and then are part of the jail culture when they leave. So absolutely the incarceration rate for black males has really hurt our ability to fight the spread of this disease.
Yes, sir, I understand that. And it's really, to a certain extent, frightening what goes on in the United States of America itself. When it comes to being black in America, it's somewhat frightening, but because when you look at the prison system and you look at the probation system and you look at juvenile detention centers, they're filled with blacks.
Right. And I think
that's not what this show is about.
Right.
But
it's connected. It's connected. And I think it's
slavery.
Right, you are exactly right in there. It certainly is connected. But I think that, you know, we are now to a point where we have to understand that we have got to step up and make some different personal choices. We have a system where we are the minority, and that system itself is struggling with itself. And so it's going to do everything it can to really assist the majority to the best of its ability. And when there's plenty, then they are willing to share with the minority. When there is a shortage, like the bad economy that we have in our country now and really across the globe, then there's less to go around to really help, quote-unquote, minorities or those who don't have access. And that's the system and the situation that we find ourselves in right now. But if we really break this down to some simple choices, the bottom line is, you know, black men and black women have to decide to get together, get married, and stay married. Black men have to stop taking advantage of their women. They have to stop getting multiple women pregnant. They have to teach their sons responsibility. Black men and black women need to get their sons and daughters to go to school and stay in school and to value education, to throw away the old stereotypes about, you know, how big and bad a man is measured by how many children he has or the size of his penis or his sexual prowess. Those days are gone, and we have a responsibility to really take care of those things. Are there going to always be some inequities, some parts that are not fair? Absolutely. Are there going to be Trayvon Martins who were probably shot in a situation that they didn't need to be shot, or young men that were incarcerated who probably didn't need to be incarcerated? Yes, that's going to happen in a system that's not completely fair. But when we look at the numbers that are infected with HIV, when we look at the numbers that are incarcerated, there are more than that. There are those that are there because of extremely poor decision-making by themselves and by the adults that are supposedly raising them and modeling good behavior. And we'll never be able to take responsibility for the lack of fairness in police officers and judges, but we can take responsibility for the lack of solid parenting skills in our community, for the lack of preachers being willing to step up and to preach sermons that count, and mothers and fathers holding each other accountable. We've got to do better in that regard, Angela.
Yes, you are right. We've got to hold ourselves accountable. All of us have. The black man and the black woman need to hold themselves accountable for some things. Even though racism is very prevalent and very much alive, you're right about what you said. In the near future, or say in the next 5 years, give it a short time, but 5 years, that with the CDC doing what they're doing and people like you coming on my show and talking like you are, that there will be a change in the HIV rate that will decrease?
Well, I think there's some really good indications that a significant breakthrough will be made in the next 5 to 10 years with a vaccination. I see that coming in the relatively near future. And then it's just a matter of having access to it. But even today, you know, we have some really good triple antiviral therapy that allows people to live a long time with HIV.
Yes, sir.
But the problem is, if we look in the black community, we are getting diagnosed later, and we're dying sooner because of it. And a lot of it has to do with testing. A lot of it has to do with lack of access to those drugs. So even when the vaccine comes, it's still going to be a matter of how we get it into the hands of African Americans and at what point we're able to start treatment so that once you find out, it's not a death sentence but something that you can live with. And then kind of as a broader statement that doesn't really, you know, relate to directly to your question, but I think it's important to understand, is that if not HIV and AIDS, then something else. You know, if we continue down this road of destruction of the black family, if we continue to celebrate pimps and players, you know, if we continue to celebrate, you know, young girls that twerk and, you know, that kind of things, if it's shorter skirts and higher wedges, you know, if that's what it's going to be for us as a people, then if not HIV, then something else is going to get us, is going to take its place. And so I think that's where an even more important statement lies. There are a lot of things that are going to take place, I think, in the near future that are going to cut down the death rates from HIV and AIDS. But I think if we don't change our lifestyles, then those who are saved from HIV will die from something else. You know, we still are struggling mightily with some of the simple sexually transmitted diseases, the herpes, the HPV, that leads to cervical cancer, the syphilis, the gonorrhea, those things that lead to sterilization and lead to nervous system issues. You know, those don't get nearly the radio time or the air time that HIV gets, but they are also crippling our community because they go hand in hand with the same activity, and that is unprotected sex.
I have a question, and you might not be able to answer it. The HIV virus.
Yes, ma'am.
I've never completely, and I hate to sound ignorant, but I never understood how it started and where it originated from. I don't understand that. Do you know? I guess I could do my research and read, because I do read a lot, but...
Right. There's no consensus, or there's no one agreed upon origin of HIV. It is a retrovirus. There are a number of viruses that act like HIV. Viruses are continually changing and mutating to try to avoid being treated. And you've heard some of the things, everything that it's been, it was something that was engineered to be placed in the homosexual population, something that entered into humans by humans having sex with animals and different things. You've heard some of those rumors.
Yes.
But there is no one agreed upon origin of this virus. And I think that the more likely reality is that this virus is very similar to herpes and influenza that gives you the flu, that, you know, the viruses existed before man did, and that viruses continue to multiply and mutate and change and take on different characteristics so that they can try to survive. And so as long as we have man, we are very likely to see new and different types of viruses that aren't really related to man's lifestyle or some kind of sinister plan to wipe out a certain group of people, but are just related to the science of viruses, because the viruses, like men, are trying to find a way to survive through the ages. And to do that, they have to change and modify the way that they attack their hosts, whether they're other animals or humans.
Okay, thank you for answering that, because I never did. So there's no certain origin from it.
No,
because I've heard so many different stories online, through books and things, and I just never could grasp or understand exactly where it came from. I mean, the church has one theory, that it was punishment. I don't necessarily believe that. I'm not saying I believe that, listeners. So please
don't
email me and call me and say that's what Angela said she believed. I do not necessarily believe that. But, I never did understand where it came from, because I've heard so many different stories and read so many different articles. And back in the 80s, back in 1987, 88, 89, when people really first, when they start coming to the college campuses and testing people, because I was in college at that time, and they started testing people and things like that, they still didn't know where it come from back in 1988. So, I don't know.
And that's the case with most viruses that we see today. We don't really know where they came from. I mean, there are things that are
in the area I'm from. Excuse me, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but in the area where I'm from, in the geographical area where I'm from, it's not the county I'm in, but there's no college in the county I'm in, but there's a technical center. But over in the next county is where they came into the college and start testing people for free. Now, please go on speaking.
Yeah, so I was going to say, with most viruses, we don't know their exact origin. Are there viruses and bacteria that men have changed to try to make into a weapon or something? Absolutely. I mean, that's part of the biologic warfare that people are engaging in all over the world. So I would be silly or naive to tell you that there are no viruses or bacteria that have been changed by man to try to be used as a weapon, but I can tell you that there is no credible evidence that is how HIV came into existence. And I think, you know, in the 60s and 70s, it would be a lot easier to hide something like that. I think today, if that was really the case, if this was a man-made virus or something like that, we would know. And for the punishment issue, I'll just say this to you, Angela. I always refer people to John 9 when Jesus was asked, you know, about the older blind man, you know, who had sinned, whether it was his parents or the man himself. And Jesus says that neither had sinned, but that man was born blind so that God could be glorified in that day that Jesus healed him. So, you know, one of the things that we do way too much in our communities is when somebody is sick or somebody goes to the altar for prayer, the first thing we start asking is, oh, Lord, what did they do now? Because somehow this is a manifestation of punishment. And that is a very shallow understanding of the Word of God and the way God works. So every time something bad happens to us in our life, it's not because somebody sinned or not the result of punishment. Some things God allows to come into our world and our lives so that His glory can be manifested through that situation.
Yes, sir. I have another question. I know I said I would not keep you but 30 minutes. I apologize.
Ms. Angela, you are very easy to talk to, so time flies.
Okay. All right.
What else you got?
What is biological warfare? I've heard that before. I did a little bit of reading on it, but what exactly is biological warfare?
Biological warfare is when you take some type of living entity, usually a virus or a bacteria, and you weaponize it, which means that you create some way of transporting it, either on a missile head or some other means, and you use it to specifically target a group of individuals, usually, you know, another army, another country, or another group. And so that's biological warfare. And some of the things that, you know, that are common that you hear about, like anthrax, you know, that's something that has been used and talked about. But it can be, you know, something as simple as, like I said, influenza virus. If you were in the middle of a major war and you could give everybody on the other side a cold, even though it's just a cold and the cold's not going to kill them, it certainly is going to affect their ability to fight. We know even in the early days of, you know, trying to deal with the Native Americans, you know, as some refer to as the Indians, you know, there were instances where smallpox and other things were used to help break their will to fight by making their community sick. So it's certainly not anything new. It's something that's been around for a while, but there's really no credible evidence that HIV or AIDS is something that is a result of a doctored virus or a biological weapon.
Okay. All right. Okay, that's all right. So it's inconclusive. Okay.
Correct.
All right. So you're saying, so listen, this is what Dr. Damon Brantley is saying, to help our community, not just our community, but other communities as well, but the black American community is the one mainly targeted by HIV and AIDS. He's saying lifestyle changes. Am I correct?
Absolutely. So, I mean,
lifestyle changes. Monogamy, being with one partner, being faithful to your mate, things like that. That's for men and women. And
absolutely.
What else did you say?
Well, the two biggest things are lifestyle changes and testing. You know, all the data shows that when a person knows that they're infected, that they do alter their behavior and they become less of a risk to everybody else. When people do not know their status, then they continue to participate in high-risk behavior, which then allows the virus to spread. So, you know, lifestyle changes and testing. Get yourself tested and certainly have anybody that you're thinking about participating in intimacy with tested. But, you know, Angela, you cannot look at anybody and tell that they have HIV or AIDS until they are very sick. So you cannot tell. And so when you engage in sexual activity and sexual contact with people, it is a high-risk situation because there's no way to tell by looking. And also, I know that you're aware that even once you are tested, there can be a delay between you becoming infected and you actually testing positive.
How long is that delay now? That's a question I wanted to know. It used to be 10 years. Has that been shortened?
Right. So we can still see delays. We're talking about in the serial conversion of up to 6 or 7 years. But with the new testing, that's highly unusual. Usually people now with serial convert within 12 to 18 months with the newer testing. I mean, you usually will test positive. So can it still happen? Can you still have a longer time? Yes, but a lot of that, was earlier when we had less sensitive testing. And that's why the CDC, still advises annual testing for people who are continually participating in high-risk behavior.
Please explain that.
Right, so the high-risk behavior is having unprotected sex with multiple partners, right, or engaging in injectable drugs, particularly sharing needles. So that's considered high-risk behavior. And unfortunately, you know, when we look at, who's being affected, even our children, I mean, the rates among black teenagers are also higher than anyone else. And it's not that they're using a lot of injectable drugs, all right? It is because of their having unprotected sex with multiple partners.
Okay, the teenagers that I have been now, teenagers, I don't know how many teenagers listen to this show, but that I have for the mothers and fathers, dads, the mothers, dads, grandmas, granddads, aunts, and uncles who are listening to this show, the teenagers that are having multiple partners and unprotected sex, since they're so young at the ages they are having, some of them not even 18, could it be that some of them are born with that disease? Could it be possible that that's another way that that is spread, that they're born with it? I'm not trying to stigmatize anybody or anything like that, but could that be it? Some of it?
Right. Well, we certainly are. That is one way of transmitting. So from mother to child is a way to transmit HIV/AIDS. And it's interesting that you mention that because really when we look at it, we would think that the rate would really be higher, but only about 1 in 10 actually get the disease from an HIV-positive mother. And there's some new data out that says that there may be antibodies in the breast milk that are actually protecting more of those children from the HIV and AIDS. But certainly from the mother is a way to get it. But when we look at the numbers that are exploding in teenagers, 13 to 19, that's not transmitting from a mother during pregnancy. I mean, that is behavior, again, the unprotected sex with multiple partners, and a higher rate of experimentation with same-sex relationships. And partly we know this because we're also seeing the same rise in other sexually transmitted diseases. So we see, just like we're seeing peaks in HIV, we're also seeing the peaks in syphilis and gonorrhea and chlamydia. And so we know that those things are not transmitted from the mother during pregnancy at those rates, that this represents a trend in a certain type of behavior. And it's very difficult, Ms. Angela. Again, we go to lifestyle. You know, mothers and aunts and grandmothers that you mentioned and are listening to the show.
Granddads, grandparents.
It's important, the lifestyle that they model. It's not impossible, but it becomes more difficult when you are a young mother with two or three different kids, with two or three different fathers, and you're having multiple boyfriends that are coming over and spending the night. It becomes not impossible, but more difficult for you to then try to teach your daughter to have, intimacy with one person only after marriage. And so some of it is, again, back to what we're modeling as we're trying to teach the kids what to do. Same way with fathers, in terms of that whole player pimp mentality. You're familiar with the music today and the misogyny.
Yes.
You know, it certainly celebrates, you know, putting women down, over-sexualizing women, the role of women as, you know, sexual divas. It certainly stimulates their thought process that somehow, you know, they are less of a woman if they can't attract people with, you know, big bottoms and bosoms, as opposed to their intellect, their ability to articulate, being smart and dynamic and creative. That's not what we see in videos, and that's not what they're seeing. So that's what they're modeling. They're modeling, you know, hot tub parties and sex parties and those kind of activities, and they don't realize how much of what they are seeing in videos is not real, first of all, and second of all, certainly not healthy. And so we've got to take responsibility for that. So long answer to your question, but yes, so we do see transmission from pregnant mothers to their children, but that is certainly a small percentage of the increase that we're seeing in teenagers. Most of that increase has to do with the activities that they're participating in and their unwillingness to get tested.
All right. Okay. Is there anything you'd like to add that has not been covered?
Well, I think, you know, I would just reiterate, you know, we have got to talk about sex with each other and with our children. You know, that's what HIV and AIDS really comes down to. Yes, there's a significant part of this related to injectable drugs, but a big part of this has to do with sex and sexual content. And if they don't learn it at home or in church, then they will learn it in the street. And most of the people in the street are teaching them a version of sex that leaves them vulnerable to exploitation. And, you know, it only takes one experience to have your life change forever. So we are losing a lot. We're losing a lot of hardworking men and women, potential school teachers, lawyers, doctors, just good folks that work in the cafeteria. Think people that make up a solid community, we're losing to death and sickness unnecessarily. You know, this isn't a terrorist that wears a turban, or this isn't a terrorist that wears a white hood or a sheet over his head and burns a cross. You know, this is a terrorist that is able to move from your sister to my cousin to my brother to your uncle, one to another, just because of the way that we choose to act and conduct ourselves. It is something that is completely...
It's the terrorist that moves from one to the other because of the way we choose to conduct ourselves, okay?
Yep. And I thank you, Ms. Angela, for having me and allowing me to share with you. I look forward to coming back on the show.
Yes, I look forward to having you. And don't forget the education program we're supposed to have, and I look forward to having you back again.
Absolutely. I'm excited.
All right, I'll be sending you an email about the free gift I'm going to give you.
Well, certainly.
You know, I already sent it, but
you don't have to do that, but I appreciate you. So,
all right.
And if you get the opportunity, Miss Angela, don't forget to follow me on Twitter at DJKUK, and look out for Healing Rock Ministries on the web.
Yes, sir.
Amen.
That's Healing Rock Ministries.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. On the web, on Twitter.
On Twitter is DJKUK.
All right. Okay. I look forward to following you.
All right.
All right. Thank you
thank
for
you,
coming
Angela.
On. Show. Thank you, Dr. Brantley, for coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler. Thank you very much. Listeners, it is also estimated by the CDC that 1 in 5 of adults and adolescents in the U.S. are living with HIV unawares. So that's something to think about. 1 in 5. That's 1 in 5 people. That's according to the CDC, which is the Center for Disease Control. HIV is serious. Dr. Damon Brantley said, lifestyle changes. You know, some things are in our own hands and that we can do the change within ourselves and change our own lives and others around us. So he was 100% right. So I hope someone was able to gain something by hearing this show and learn something. That was the whole point of doing this show, not to exploit people or to talk about people, but to help people live longer, and to help eradicate this horrible disease out the community. Black Americans are affected at a much higher rate than any other race. So we need to check ourselves and change our lifestyles, like Dr. Brantley says. All right, listeners, let's not forget Butterfly Cosmetics by CEO April Smith Holt. April Smith Holt is the president of Butterfly Cosmetics. That's makeup, everybody. It's www.butterflycosmetics.com. Let's not forget Power the V by John Watts. That's the author. Let's not forget Miss Angelina Squire. The name of her book is Let the Voice of the Lord be Louder Than Your Voice of Struggle. Don't forget to check her book out. And let's go to some commercials, listeners.
When you're searching for the latest news on entertainment, the economy, business, technology, and creative arts, choose
the Digital Conglomerate Magazine.
Not only do they give you all the latest information, but they're there for you 24/7, baby, giving you the 411 and all you need to know, baby. Visit the Digital Conglomerate Magazine online. Just Google us, baby. We're everywhere.
Youth is defined by statute as a child under the age of 18 who meets at least one of the following three requirements: is absent from home for at least 72 consecutive hours without parental consent, or is beyond parental control such that his/her behavior endangers the health, safety, or welfare of the child or any other person, has a substance abuse problem for which there are no pending criminal charges relating to the substance abuse. At Camp Penny, we have found that at-risk youth struggles with complex issues and scenarios that are brought on by peers, mentors, family members, and difficult social environments. Camp Penny understands the increased complexity of today's at-risk youth, as on parents. Camp Penny works with nonprofits and federal agencies to find solutions. Today's youth are exposed to a variety of negatives, making them more at risk to injury, academic failure, and poor health. Teens who are likely to be more at risk are usually those that do not have a strong support system at home and in the community, as well as teens who are not coping well with the different challenges that they are facing. So what sorts of programs will Camp Penny have? Camp Penny will provide outdoor activities as a main feature of the camp. There is no sitting around getting bored at Camp Penny. The girls will eat a well-balanced and healthy diet, then get outside for some well-planned and highly beneficial programs. Just the Camp Penny location is a real boost for our children. The beauty of nature may not have previously registered with many city-bound kids. Out in the wilderness, the teens get to commune with nature, observe the wildlife, and tackle challenging physical tasks that will build their self-confidence and their muscles. If you would like to help or become a volunteer of the Camp Penny project, please contact us at client@camppenny.org. Let's save our daughters.
Let's get down to business. So you're having that company function or business function, and you need the proper services to get that business menu pumped. Okay, here's the solution. Call Exquisite Barista Services. Exquisite Barista Services has the experience to create a signature beverage for your business or organization. Services also include barista training, custom beverage menu creation, food and beverage pairing, and so much more. Visit Exquisite Barista Services online at www.exquisiteexpressinc.com, or better yet, call 210-701-0143. That's 210-701-0143. Don't take your chances on the other man. Get that grand plan and choose Exquisite Barista Services.
It's a love song.
Butler, don't forget to get tested for HIV and AIDS. Have a good afternoon, everyone.